Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
All right, guys, that sounds kind of fancy schmancy, and thank you, Randy K, for that intro. We're hanging on to that intro for years and years and years now. Sometimes you're like, you need to change that intro up, and I love that intro because it's my friend Randy K, and she taped it for me, and I'm all proud of it. So thank you, Randy, always for that kind, cool intro that surprised me that one day, and ever so grateful for you, and we're ever so grateful for our guest, Tammy Simon, who is with us. Our phone lines are jammed. Tammy, I think you all might know who she is, but we're gonna really give you an overview of Tammy Simon today, and she'll play along with our games, I hope. She is the founder of Sounds True, everyone, and I know you all know that and can go to the website, soundstrue.com, but we started off this conversation talking about my favorite thing, dogs, aside from cats, too. All you cat fans are safe with us dog fans and cat fans because we love all animals. And it just gave me goosebumps as we were started to talk about doggies because I know. So fluffy and furry friends. I thought about this one, Tammy. Are you ready for my bad joke?
Yes, please. Okay. I want to play your games, whatever they are. I don't know, but I'm in.
All right, I'm in too. Fluffy and furry friends. Last night as I was thinking about that, I'm like, and that doesn't mean you people out there who have not had haircuts and who have gained 15 pounds during COVID. We're talking about pets. That was my joke. And that's a bad one, but whatever, you know, kind of thing. So dog, can we start with dogs? Because there's a book that you've written called Dharma of Dogs. Talk about how dogs are special.
It was a book actually, you know, that I edited. And what we did was we put together about 20 different pieces of writing and photographs, accompanying photographs of spiritual teachers and their dogs, with each spiritual teacher writing in the Dharma of dogs, meaning what the essential life truths were that they learned from being in relationship with their four-legged furry friends. And I think the inspiration really for me is that at a certain point, I realized that I was learning the most from Jasmine, a dog that was in my life for 14 years, who lived to be 17. I met Jasmine at the same time that I met my partner, Julie. Jasmine came with Julie. And Jasmine was just such a heart-opening force in my life. And I think she opened me to love through her life and also love through her loss, through her death, unlike anything else, unlike any spiritual book I ever read, and unlike any month-long meditation retreat I went on. I learned more from our bond and the closeness of our bond and how our bond helped me belong, feel like I belonged in a certain kind of way because I was so connected to another being. I used to talk about her like she was my third leg because everywhere I walked, there was Jasmine with me. And so that was what the inspiration was between the Dharma of dogs, how much they can be teachers.
Aw, Jasmine. Yeah, I would get up, my doggie would get up. And another 14-year doggie story, she was a big, my doggie was Tessa, and she was a big dog, like almost 100 pounds big. And when we got her, hold on, I'm going to hijack the show for a second. When we got her, I was looking for a dog because we had four boys, and the oldest was 10. And I'm like, what kind of dog can we have into this mix where they won't bite or, you know, all those things that dogs might do? And this gal here in Maine said, I have the perfect dog for your family. It's a dog that didn't quite qualify as a therapy dog, because she didn't like other dogs, but oh, she loves kids. And so we went and we got her, and the golden doodles are so amazing. And what's a spoodle?
A spoodle, which is the two dogs that I have now after Jasmine, who was a Cocker Spaniel. They are half Spaniel, and half poodle, and that's the Australian name for the cockapoo. And because I have a marriage to a woman, we just couldn't go around and saying, there's the two of us and two cockapoos. We're playing games here now, Elizabeth. I just couldn't
yes,
do
we
it.
Are.
I just couldn't do it.
No, you can't do
so
that.
We adopted the Australian name for the breed, which is Spoodle.
I love it. And that's raspberry and how
and
do you say
Bula.
The other one?
Bula.
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 And what's the significance of those names? Because all these names have some.
Yeah, sure. Okay. If you really want to hear it. So raspberry, when we saw her on the website, all of the dogs from this particular litter were named according to their color collar. So she was called Raspberry because that was the color of her collar. And we started calling her Raspberry Girl. And when it came to naming her, you know, my wife was like, we're not going to call a dog Raspberry. I'm like, but she's our Raspberry Girl. And, you know, Julie, my partner, was like, no, 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 that's a ridiculous name for a dog. You don't name a dog after a piece of fruit, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, her name's Raspberry, and I just feel it. And she's an all-black spoodle, so actually she's like a black raspberry. And then Bula is a word from Fiji, and when we had been traveling in Fiji at one point, we saw how everyone in the country would say Bula. It's kind of like the word shalom in Hebrew. Mm. It means hello and peace and have a good day and, you know, may peace be with you. And so the Fijian people, honestly, in all the places I've traveled through, are the happiest people. They have just such a happy disposition. And in the morning, everyone would say, Bula, 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 and smile at you. And we said to each other, when we get a dog, let's call her Bula. And that will remind us of this, the happiness of the people of Fiji.
Oh, pure love. And hi, Julie. Oh, that's amazing. All right. You know, the one thing I'm hearing in your voice that I absolutely love about you is that you explain and you teach as you talk. I absolutely love that. Thank you for that. I hope you all are enjoying that as she's talking, because that's an amazing gift. Thank you for that.
Uh-huh. It's interesting that you pointed out. I think it's not even particularly conscious on my part, but I do always think of myself, you know, I also host a podcast, Elizabeth, which I think you know, and I always think of myself as a listener advocate, meaning I'm always listening through the ears of the person receiving the show. And I want them to have all the information so they can kind of put all the pieces together and connect the dots so people aren't left out of whatever context they need to make sense out of things. So I think that's just maybe some part of me that's internalized being an educator, you know, being the publisher at Sounds True for 35 years, I'm always looking out for the reader or the listener that they're getting the full communication and all the necessary context. But
that's
I hadn't really
special...
thought about it, so thank you for pointing it out.
Well, it's a special gift because a lot of times we get that flipped around and we think it's all about us. You know, it's not the all about me
right.
show. You know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
even when you said
tricky.
In the introduction, we're going to learn all about Tammy Simon, I was a little bit like, huh, that's interesting. Who's she? And I mean, obviously, I know that this is the life I'm animating and stuff, so I'm not trying to sound all dissociated and strange. And we kind of make up these stories about ourselves. We make up these narratives of our life, whereas actually I think we're, oh, God, this is going to get a little esoteric here, but we're existing
Good.
In an intersubjective space with other people. So right now, it's you, it's me, and the listeners. And, you know, interestingly, we were just recording 2 days ago with Eckhart Tolle, and we're creating, it sounds true, a new series with him that's going to go live this fall called Being the Light, an inward journey to accelerate conscious evolution during times of crisis. But right at the beginning, there were just about 15 of us that were on this Zoom call as we were recording this introductory session, and he said, the teaching is a product of the teacher and the students who are listening. The teaching comes from our interaction. It doesn't just exist as something a spokesperson is delivering. It actually emerges. It arises from the interaction, from the shared field. So actually what's happening right now in our conversation, you and me, is the listeners are part of it. And it's arising between all of us. And It's what is wanted right now in this intersubjective field. So anyway, I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I do too. I'm for sure going to listen to that. When does that come out? And what is that called? One more time.
It's called Being the Light, an inward journey to accelerate conscious evolution in times of crisis. And the series begins in October, and we'll be announcing it in the middle of September officially. We're just doing some of the preparatory work, but it was just this comment about where our words actually come from. They come from our shared connection.
So that's so true. Exactly. Sounds true, right? Can you go back?
You can only say that one once. It's done.
That just came out of my mouth. That wasn't even like, oh yeah, I'm with Tammy Simon. It sounds true. I'm like, yeah, it sounds true. Oh yes. Speaking of that moment, okay, so sounds true. Can you take us back to that moment where at age, I think, 22, so I have children. Yeah. My oldest is 25, and we go 24, 21, and 19. So I'm thinking of them going, I know, I'm going to start a company. Wow. Talk about that. Yeah. What was that moment like?
Sure.
Please.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to have to bring you back a little further into my personal biography, because I think sometimes when you have like a moment that you start a company, it doesn't actually come out of nowhere. There's a buildup to that moment. And I think it really began in some ways when I first started reading books by Hermann Hesse when I was a high school student. And, you know, I remember when I read Demian and when I read Siddhartha. And then I read a bunch of books by Alan Watts, and these books were my best friends. Before I started having dogs as best friends, I had books as best friends. Tells you something about the kind of person I am, an inward person, meaning-seeking person. And so I loved these books so much. So that was the beginning. And when I went to college, I thought I would be a philosophy major, and it turned out that I was in the religious studies department, because what I was really interested in was personal, direct experience of, you could call it the nature of being, you could call it God, the divine. Who are we? What's going on? What happens when we die? What's our essence? What is the meaning of life? Like, these were the things as a young person that were the most important to me, and they filled my inner inquiry and inner discovery. And so there I am in the religious studies department at Swarthmore College, studying the writings of great mystics. And I realized that any mystic worth their salt wouldn't get an academic degree in mysticism. It just didn't make sense. Because, of course, in academia, especially 37 years ago, you weren't really allowed to talk about your own experience. You had to write about what other people had discovered and analyze it. And I was like, that's not the mystical path. To share about what Meister Eckhart discovered or Teresa of Avila. It's about going inward and finding what's true for yourself. So I left, and I traveled around Sri Lanka, India, and Nepal for a year. And during that time, I discovered the practice of meditation. And I went on these intensive 10-day meditation retreats with a teacher, a Burmese meditation master, Goenka. And when I discovered these, they were like boot camp, 10-day intensive periods. And when I discovered meditation and the lights went on inside in a certain kind of way. And what I mean by that is that I knew that the answers to the questions that were so important to me would only come from my inner experience, and that I had access, that there was like an umbilical cord directly to all the answers I needed, really, if I would be quiet, listen, breathe, and just stay put for a bit and listen intently, that there was a sense of being like plugging in to a divine source that would animate my intelligence, creativity, and life. So that was my big discovery when I was 21. And I made a commitment that I would share contemplative practice, whether that was meditation or prayer or any practice that tuned people in to that electrical current that's always available to us, that I would share those practices as widely as I could with my life, that that was what my life would be about. And I fully devoted myself to that, dedicated myself. So traveling around India, I would go to these various temples, and I would lie flat on the ground with my hands outstretched in front of me in a prostration on the ground, you know, head in the sand, saying, you know, this is what I give my life to. This is what I want to do.
Hmm.
Okay, so we'll just take a pause for a moment, Elizabeth, because that's what kind of seeded the ground of Sounds True, was that movement inside of me. And then when I came back to the United States, my parents were like, you're going to finish college, right? And I was like,
sure,
I don't think so. And they were like, well, what are you going to do then? And I was like, well, I don't know. And they're like, well, we're not going to support you. And I was like, well, I don't think you should. Why should you support me? And, you know, their big Trump card. I was like, no, you shouldn't support me. I should support myself. And I'll figure it out. And, you know, that was a really big moment for me as a person, because I had been given everything in my life, really. I'd been given an incredible education by parents who adored me. And for me to basically say, I don't want it anymore, I'm going to go off on my own, they were quite disappointed and concerned. And, you know, would I be okay? And it threw me at a young age into a pretty serious type of dark night. And what I mean by that is I had a lot of despair at that point. I had this vision, but I didn't know how to realize it. And I felt that I had been given so much as a person. I had been just given every opportunity. And how was I going to give back? And so I started saying a prayer. God, I'm willing to do your work. Please show me. Please show me what it is. And while I was saying this prayer, I was waitressing in a greasy Chinese restaurant in Boulder, Colorado. I had a radio show, volunteer, Boulder County Community Radio. I was interviewing spiritual teachers because I wanted to continue the education and religious studies that I didn't think I could get in an academic setting, but I thought, oh, maybe I can get it if I just go direct to living spiritual teachers and ask them questions and learn from them. And saying this prayer, one of the people that I interviewed for my radio show was a very successful entrepreneur. And as it turned out, I was interviewing him just a couple of months after my father had died. So my father died when I was 21 years old. And when he died, I inherited about $50,000. And at the time, it seemed like a whole hell of a lot of money to me. And, you know, in today's time, that would be like $200,000. And I said to this person that I was interviewing for my radio show, what should I do with this money that I inherited? I don't know what to do with it. And he said, why don't you put it into yourself? And I was like, well, that's a great idea, but me and myself, we don't quite know what to do. Like, great idea, put it in myself, but what are we going to do? And he looked at me and he said, Tammy, you know what you want to do. Come back to me in a few days and we'll talk about it. And then this odd thing happened. I walked out of his office, and as I walked out of his office, I kind of felt like I was walking slightly above the ground, like my feet were a few feet above the ground, not walking on the ground. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like walking on air. Like literally, that's, you know, I feel so odd. And then I heard a voice. And of course, I'll never know, was this the voice inside my head, some kind of internal voice? Was it some guiding angel whispering in my ear? I have no idea. But I heard three words, and they were disseminate spiritual wisdom. And then my feet hit the ground, started walking like a normal person, and I started thinking about it. How am I going to disseminate spiritual wisdom? And then I remembered, oh, I have a radio show, and I love audio. I love listening. I love the human voice. I love words. And already people had requested copies of my little radio show. I would sell 5 copies a week or something on a little dubbing cassette deck that I had in my bedroom, charge people $10 a cassette, smallest cottage business in the world. And I was like, huh, okay. disseminate spiritual wisdom. I'll start with audio. And that was the beginnings of Sounds True.
Oh. I love that story. It's not even, it's just meant to be.
Yeah, there's this sense of a miracle story, if you will. And a miracle meaning here I was a desperate, praying and lost 21-year-old. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, who wanted to do something good and was looking for a set of operating instructions from the universe. And I received them in a way that was, you couldn't doubt it. I couldn't doubt it. I mean, someone from the outside could doubt it. And believe me, as I've told this story over the years, I've been made fun of, and different things have happened. Oh. And, you know, depending on, you know, different things. Like, oh, she heard
there,
a voice,
for sure.
You know, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But in my own internal experience, this was unshakable. I knew this was what I was supposed to do and that I would find a way to do it.
That is so... That actually gives me, for all you all listening who just got a little bit of self-confidence from that, that just made, the whole time you were talking, I'm like, it's a hard feeling to explain, but it's almost like goosebumps. Like the dog story at the beginning, you know, when you were talking about dogs, I just had that all again. For anybody trying to start something, or you have a vision in your head and you don't know how to begin and all those things, it's powerful what you just said. I hope people replay that and listen to you, because you followed yourself. And I had a moment like that.
I think the Oh, go ahead, please. I want to hear.
Well,
I was just going to underscore maybe part of the application for people who are listening, which is one that we're not in this on our own. There was a sense that there was cosmic support coming. And that I believe that cosmic support was in direct proportion to the sincerity of my heart's prayer, that there was a direct relationship there, that I really wanted to be of service, and I really wanted to bring contemplative practice to as many people as possible. That was sincere.
Yeah.
And when I said, God, I'm willing to do your work, I was like, I was imagining myself mopping floors. And I was like, you know, if I have to mop floors, if that's the work that God wants me to do, I'll do that. Like, I want to serve. I want to be part of the solution here. And I'm offering myself fully. And I think the response and the clarity of the response that I received, and it didn't happen right away. It took, you know, I had to repeat this prayer again and again inside. But it came. It came. And the support came. And that's the point I want to underscore, is that I think sometimes we get this idea that it's kind of all up to us. And I don't see it that way. I think we're part of a living network, and that the universe meets our sincerity.
Yeah. And you're resonating with Mel, the podcast kitty in the background. More cosmic confirmation with, I have a feral cat that we adopted, and her name is Mel. And she has co-hosted all 522 episodes of the show, and when she loves a guest, she meows in the background, and that was her meowing to everything you were just saying after like every sentence, like giving a yeah. So sorry.
But now, Elizabeth, I want to hear your story.
I have a financial services background, and the littlest one went into first grade, and I went, oh, I'll go get a job kind of thing. And I was in this job, and we won't name names or anything like that, but the job just wasn't working out. So I closed the door to my office and I said, please give me a clue of what I'm supposed to do, what I'm meant for, and who I can assist in this world, and very sincere calling as well. Just like, well, it's got to be something different than this. This isn't it. And I took pen to paper in front of me. It was a blank piece of paper, and I wrote down best ever you. I have no idea still to this day really where that came from. And I wrote, there's way better. You know, it's just a kind of a mishmash of things. And but best ever you was very clear. And I went up the street to my neighbor who knew how to do websites and trudged up the street. And I said, so this happened. And she's like, oh, I can do like a let's see if besteveryou.com is open. And we started it right then and there, my neighbor up the street and I, and we featured my best friend from kindergarten who was sewing baby bibs on her kitchen counter for all of the people who were celebrating all of these babies while she was miserable in infertility. She since has two beautiful children, but she was just in this miserable mode of happiness but sadness at the same clashing time. And so it just was like a poof of beauty into the air of helping people be their best. And she was kind of the person we started talking about, you know, let's get over these moments of feeling so bad about yourself and what's great about you. And, you know, all the things that where people step in and just support your goals and dreams in life. And that's mm-hmm. how we started. But I was wondering if we could talk about, I have this moment where I can't, I bet people might resonate with this as well, but I cannot get the picture of my father dying out of my head very easily. I have to really, some days I'll just be like sit with it all day because I miss him so much. But he died in October 2018. He's a stroke survivor since 2004. And so when you watch someone take their last, there are all sorts of emotions that come up. And you were talking about the death of your father. Do you think about that a lot, or I don't even know how what to say or how to articulate that.
Sure.
Quite.
No, there's so much in
help
your
me out.
There's so much in your question, and
yeah.
You know, interestingly, Elizabeth, you're going right for the heart and soul of life in a certain way, starting by talking about dogs, which to me opens my heart, and probably for many of your listeners too, unlike anything else, because the love is so pure. And here, you know, the love of our parents and their passing, even if our relationships with our parents are complicated and have you know, different aspects of things we really appreciated and will miss about them, combined with things that were hard for us or difficult, they're our parents. And, you know, I have a picture of my parents from their wedding that's on my desk. It's pretty big. And I realized that after creating different altars throughout my life with various spiritual teachers on those altars, that in many ways my parents were the key. Their photograph was the key element in any altar that I would have as a person, because I'm their continuation. I'm the product of their love. I inherited the best and the worst in them, and I am here to transmute the negative qualities I inherited and give voice and expression and carry on the lineage of all the incredible things I inherited from them. And, you know, quite honestly, as we're talking right now, I feel both of their presences with me in a strong way. And I feel both of their presences with me a lot. I really do. And that way I feel, I think, more like someone who is from an earth-based spiritual tradition and has a very strong connection to ancestors and the way that our ancestors empower us and want to continue to partner with us in the world to bring forward the best gifts of our lineage. So you asked about my father. You know, I was so young when he died. And in many ways, I don't even think I knew at the time how to integrate it into my experience. And really at that point when he died, I was more concerned as a 21-year-old with kind of finding my place in the world. Mm-hmm. That was more what was important for me then. Over the years, I've missed him so much in different ways. And yet, as I said, I feel that connection with him. Now, my mother, meaning I feel him right now, so I kind of miss him, I feel him. I feel, you know, to say, oh, he would have been so proud if he could have seen different things in my business and stuff like that. Well, I think he can. So it's just, I'm just sharing with you my truth from my heart, whatever people make of it.
Thank you.
Now with my mom, because you talked about being at the bedside and somebody having their last breath. Well, you talked about the last breath, which put me at the bedside of my mother, who died a little over a year ago. And she was 94 at the time. And I was with her. I was there holding her hand. And Julie, my partner, was on the other side of her, the bed, holding her other hand. And it's so amazing to be with somebody and to watch their physical organism complete itself.
Yeah.
And no longer be animated by breath. And then to feel all the feelings that we have. And then to sense the presence of their soul. And to sense that continuity. All happening in the room at the same time. And yeah, so you're bringing this up because I think it's just such an important thing to talk about. People don't talk about it that much in our culture. We have a culture where, you know, death is often one of those things that's like a medical event instead of a community, soul-based event. And I just think it's important to share these stories because they're so intimate and rich and significant to who we are. And I think about that moment a lot, being with my mom at her bedside. I think about it a lot.
Yeah, I do too with my dad. And it's not necessarily good or bad or anything. It just sort of is. And I've learned to sort of let it be what it is. When it comes up for me, I just am like, okay. You know, you might want to be telling me something today or whatever it is. I don't know, but we were all in the room together and we knew he was going to pass within a certain time frame. And it was, 20 people in a room. He was very, very, very special. And it's interesting to thank you for allowing me to talk about my dad a little bit here. And thank you for sharing about your parents as well. I agree with you so much that we don't talk about that. And I think, can I keep going for a second about one of the things? And you can
please.
So since this has happened, and it was October 2018, I came back. My parents are in Minnesota, and I'm in Maine. And I would go back and forth and all this stuff. And when I came back, I don't know why I decided to go to the grocery store. I must have felt a little less sad or whatever. But I got to the grocery store, and I was standing over pears. And this lady came up to me and she looked at me and said, "Which one of your parents just passed away?" And I'm like, "How in the world would you know that?" That's what I said to her. She said, "That look on your face is unmistakable." And I guess I was crying over the pears. And she said, "Permission to just give you a hug." And I don't know who she was. I've looked around. I go to the grocery store sometimes just to see if I'll find her again to give, you know, return the hug, not in COVID environment. I haven't been there for a while, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
In 2019, I would travel up to the grocery store and just sort of hang around the pears to see if I might see her again. And I've never seen her again since.
I think that story also, it's a indicator again of the absolute aliveness of the world that we're not living. We think we're in our own little bubble, but we're not. We're in a web of living, communicating, listening, and then responding, interactive nodes, all of the people, the wind, you know, the elements, all of it is communicating with us.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us are walking around, I've been trying to, as much as I can, say, please pause for other people. And when you encounter other people, please encounter them with a sense of grace and compassion and maybe even, you know, a pause in there to respect what might be going on in their life in the background that you don't even have a clue about. I think we're walking around with people where like multiple things might, especially right now, where multiple things might be playing out at once. And you just have no sense of maybe what they are. We're very good hiders of what's happening.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, I think especially right now, there's so much happening for all of us. I don't know a single person who isn't being touched in some way by the pandemic, by the economic issues, by the ecological disturbances and disruptions in the environment, the fires, the hurricane, et cetera, et cetera. And so everyone is their own kind of cauldron of metabolizing suffering. And if not their own, then that of people that they know or the collective. And I think it's a time for each one of us where the more we can do our inner work and be clear and in our heart and calm and open and spacious, then we are available to be able to give a gift to another person and not just be part of the kind of toxic overflow. Because, you know, COVID stress is very real. It's very real.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're all experiencing it. And I think it's asking all of us to up our inner commitments and clearing mechanisms so that we can be a medicine for others.
We have a question. Would you like a question? I'm not going to.
Sure.
Yeah, they typed it in, so I'll repeat it. But it goes back to the beginning of the show, actually. Sorry that I missed your question while we were talking at the beginning of the show. I didn't see it. But here we go. The question is, you mentioned some authors and books that she said I am unfamiliar with. If I'm new to it's basically, I'm going to paraphrase, if I'm new to this experience of listening to you and trying to learn and so forth, where do you recommend I start?
Well, God, I have to say, this is a little bit like being spiked, giving the ball to Spike in volleyball or something like that. But check out SoundsTrue.com.
There you go.
So SoundsTrue.com, we've published so many books and audio programs and courses. And in the beginning of the show, we were talking about the book, The Dharma of Dogs. And you can find that at SoundsTrue.com. But if you just go to SoundsTrue.com, there's, you know, 500 plus free podcasts. So you could listen to those and see which authors and which books appeal to you and just lots of other content.
Yeah. What's the name of your podcast again?
It's called Insights at the Edge.
Love it. And so that'd probably be another great place to start. Let me rephrase that. You're a lifelong learner, right?
For sure.
Who do you study? What are you thinking about these days? What are you reading?
Okay, Elizabeth, you really want to know? You asked me, so. Okay. Well, it's a little esoteric, but the only person whose books I really deeply read and study for fun, like outside of the Sounds True world, is a writer who writes under the pen name A.H. Almas, A.L.M.A.A.S., A.H. Almas. And he's the founder of something called the Diamond Approach. And I love to really deeply study his books. So in that sense, I'm a true spiritual nerd. Like some of his books are like 500 pages long. So on vacation, I bring an Almas book with me. And that's what I read on the beach in Hawaii or something. And, you know, it's a little odd, not, you know, most people have a magazine or something. And I have this, you know, but that's it. The Diamond Approach is really a seamless integration of a spiritual approach to life and a psychological approach, where you're simultaneously working on both aspects of yourself. Because I think one of the things I found in my work, It Sounds True, is I would work with different spiritual teachers, like, well, you know, that's good, but how come they still have this part of their psychology that's so unresolved? Like there's some way that they're bypassing the emotional work they need to do. Do you know what I mean? They've gone directly up to a cloud bank in heaven. And yet I can feel like they don't say they're angry because they're not supposed to be angry because emotions aren't spiritual, but I can feel they seem a little angry to me under the surface. So, you know, it's like spirituality, how it can be used sometimes to just sort of like light wash everything. And that never worked for me as a person. For me, your psychology, which to me, psychology includes how you relate to yourself, how you relate to other people, how you handle your emotions, all of that. That has to also be mature, developed, and evolved. Sometimes people talk about it as waking up as the spiritual journey, where you wake up to something that is timeless and eternal, and growing up, which is your psychology, which is that you're a mature, developed, wise elder, and how we need to both wake up and grow up. Both are important. And so for me, Almas as a teacher is somebody who really brings those both of those things together. And that's why I like to study his work when I have time. It's deep, so it's
love it.
That's why I joked about like going on vacation with it or something.
It's okay. It adds a little, it's a carry-on, right? It's its own carry-on.
Yes, like I said, it's a little esoteric, but you asked. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Do you, what are some of the things that you've learned during COVID? I don't know if that's, if that even interests
that's,
you or
no,
not.
No, that's
but,
a big question. Yeah. Well, I'd say the main thing I've learned from COVID is how unenlightened I am. If you want to know the truth, right
I'm
there.
I'm feeling that way myself.
How much inner work I have to do. And I think there is a way pre the pandemic, I don't know, I guess I'm just going to be honest once again. You have a way, Elizabeth, of bringing out the real honesty in people. Jesus. I may provide a full context to what I'm trying to say, but you really are getting me to say certain things. But anyway, I think pre-COVID, there was a way I was kind of coasting, a dimension in which I was coasting. Meaning there wasn't so much pressure coming on me, even though, of course, there's a lot of pressure with my work and, having 125 employees and all that. It's like never goes away. But I was able to kind of draw on certain resources to keep myself in a pretty balanced place. And when the pandemic hit and everything, it was more like, oh, my God, I'm getting squeezed from the left. I'm getting squeezed from the right. I'm getting squeezed from my, from watching the news. I'm getting squeezed from, recently, you can't breathe the air outside from the fires. And when you're inside, you can't turn the swamp cooler on because it's recycling. Where can I go? So I think there's been
that
a,
way
a
yesterday.
Squeeze.
Yesterday.
Squeeze.
Like, yeah. I looked at my husband.
Yeah,
yesterday.
I'm having to.
I got
to
get out of the
deep.
House.
Yeah.
Yeah. He put me in the car and we went for a drive. I'm like, there's the beach or whatever. I know what you mean. But, can we talk about feeling like there's so much more work to do? Like you think you've got a concept down. And you're like, nope. There's more to learn. It's a wild feeling.
Yeah.
And it can leave you almost feeling like it's never enough, which is that's treading in an interesting direction. It's like, no. We need to remain feeling like enough, but maybe sometimes we don't. Maybe sometimes
I think giving a different cartography of the human journey as it is a journey without end. So I think as long as we posit some kind of goal of some kind, like I'm going to get to this place, like the end of a hike or something, and then everything's going to be, I don't think that's the right mapping of our life. If instead it's all journey all the time, there is no arriving, there is no destination.
I get to hear that.
It's actually just the moment to moment stepping one foot after another. So is each foot a good foot? Like, is it a good step on the ground? Is it a good breath, this inhale, this exhale, this part? Because there's nowhere we're actually going. There is no end point.
When my father died,
I think that go ahead.
Oh, no. Say what you're going to say. Please.
No. Please go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, when my father died, I came back to my pretty house here in Maine with my pretty car, my pretty kids, my pretty husband and all these things. And my shoes and my dresses and whatever else it is, kind of thing. And I was like, for almost all of 2019, call it a depression, call it whatever you want to call it. I could not find my footing thinking I had life wrong, feeling like, oh, it's when you see somebody take their last breath, it makes everything material feel so strange. It is a really hard concept for me to resolve in my head still as we're talking right now. I'm like, oh, what? So I thought in my head, boy, I really need to get to the heart of what matters. And I still feel like I'm doing all this work trying to figure out what really matters. And I keep coming to this conclusion that it's people, all of us, loving each other, that these moments that we have where we connect and we talk and we are actually, you know, honest with each other and so forth. I don't know what else. Do you have anything to add to that? To add some clarity?
Yeah.
What hard to figure it out.
What I would add is that all you need to know, all any of us need to know, in my view, is what matters to me right now with this step on the journey. Like, we don't have to come up with a philosophical treatise on what matters for humans and what the purpose of life in general is. You just need to know for yourself in this moment what is the right action for me? What matters to me right now in this moment? Because, and that's once again, is it's like, I think sometimes we get so abstract in our mind and we think we have to figure out all these different things as if there's some place where we're going to land in some like territory of the land that matters. Now I live in the land that matters.
That matters.
And in the land that matters, you know, whatever. And it's
right.
Not, it's just a journey. And so connecting with people and having that heart-based connection is obviously something really important to you. And there may also be a moment where the next step of what really matters to you is to go, you know, walk by yourself in the forest and cry. And that's it. That's what's real. That's like it, what's in your heart. And, you know, talk to a leaf or something. Or go clean a closet or something.
Talk
like what
to the
matters
tomatoes
to me right
outside.
Now is to go clean. Yeah, like whatever it is. And so I think when we break it down and make it just the next step, you know, that then we're in present time. We're actually right. And that's actually all we ever have is this experience right now where we all are. The future land that we're trying to get to is a fiction. It's a fabrication of our minds. When we, you know, when we get there, then there's some other future land there. So we actually have to really, really, really deeply get into the journey. And it sounds to me with your father's death that there was a huge just grieving process. And that, of course, makes sense. Of course. You know, he sounds like he was an amazing human and that he given amazing gifts to your family.
Yeah, he was. So my mom divorced my father, my father, when I was three, and then got remarried. And I know my father and all this stuff, but I was raised with James Hamilton as my father, and he adopted me and everything. So my name's Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. And so I've known him as my father, and he was who raised me since age three. And just a brilliant, brilliant soul. Oh, just miss him every day. And my mother is, my mom is so cool too. My mom is just, they're just lovely people. And when we knew my father was probably going to pass, I went to Minnesota and stayed with my mom for a really long time. And it's time that you might not have otherwise ever had. I mean, I really know my mom better than I ever would have ever. I spent every waking moment with my mom for like, I don't even know how many months it was. And then I'd come back home for a little bit and see somebody initiated into the Honor Society and then go back to Minnesota or whatever. And then following my father's death, my mom had I wouldn't call it a life-threatening surgery, but a doozy of a surgery. And so I stayed with her another 8 weeks. And that time, by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I can take a break from you. I've got you, you know, kind of thing. And then you get home and then she's like, well, I miss you. And so we flew her back here and she hung out here for a bunch of weeks, but just so, you know, parents are just so special. So it's I think a lot about people and their parents and their lives and all that stuff. People are really important to me. And I think that's one of the most fun things about interacting with the general public and other people and so forth is you hear about everybody's lives. Don't you find people fascinating?
I do. I find people, I mean, in a way I could find almost anything fascinating, to be honest. And I mean, I know it may sound weird, but anything could be fascinating, you know, if you pay careful enough reverent
attention
to it. Now, the one thing that I think I just want to underscore, the question, what really matters to me, that is a very, very, very profound door-opening question, I think. And so if the loss of your father brought that question to the forefront, that's profound. I mean, that's, I think, one of the gifts that grief gives us. I think that's also potentially one of the gifts that the pandemic could be bringing to us as a culture, is for people to be asking that. Are the things that I thought mattered? I thought it mattered, you know, to go out to restaurants and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or I thought it mattered to have this, that, you know, what really matters actually? And so I guess I just want to underscore that the answer, I don't think, is even as important as deeply reflecting each one of us on that question.
Yeah. I think about it every day. When I wake up in the morning, first of all, I'm very thankful that I'm alive because I have really life-threatening food allergies and so forth, and I deal with a medical condition every day. And then I think about what matters. And what's going to matter? What am I going to do, or what's somebody else going to do, and so forth, to really like matter? And I don't know. I agree with you so much. It's a question, isn't it? And it really, I think the pandemic definitely makes us think about that a lot. I know I've been looking around, going, I had some things wrong, I think, and to not beat yourself up on that score too. You know, to think, oh, I might have had that view on that or this purchase wrong or whatever it is, but to not go all into mode of, oh, I suck because I did that. That's a slippery slope.
And I think just we're always learning. Just to say, you know, you asked me, are you a lifelong learner? And I was like, heck yeah. And if you have that view of learning, we're always learning. Every day I'm learning. Then if you learn something new, it may and often will correct something that was an old view or an old perspective. And certainly I think being motivated by self-criticism is an outdated view that we could grow out of. And there's a lot of research now that shows that when we act out of things like self-compassion instead of self-criticism, or when we fill ourselves with gratitude for what we do have, if we come from those places and make changes in our life versus coming from a place of putting ourselves down, it actually works better. The changes we want to make happen more easily, and we're able to stick with them more. So I think going to these places of self-compassion, just like, oh, I'm a human being. As a human being, I'm always learning. That means that even what I just learned today is going to become outdated. You know, even that, your new big discovery is going to become old news at some point. That's what evolution's all about. Okay, great. I'm a learner.
I love it. Okay, with 5 minutes left, what haven't we talked about that you might want to talk about? That's the old can of worms. What did I ask you? Tell us something.
Well, I noticed in reviewing our conversation that the one thing I felt that I had this question mark about was sharing with you how much I love reading the books of A.H. Almas. And I don't want to necessarily go back into the deep end of what about those books, because that's not the point. The point is I shared something about myself that is perhaps a little odd. It's not like I didn't share with you some New York Times bestselling author that everybody's going to appreciate and stuff like that. And the reason I'm underscoring this is that I think all of us have our own little oddities and peculiarities. And often we're a little ashamed about them, or we think, oh, that's what makes me weird or a freak or whatever. And I think what I want to share is that that's also what makes us special and specially us, and that we can actually come forward in our oddities, and that when we do, it's strangely freeing in a way, that we don't have to fit some status quo framework, like a Procrustean bed, you know, the story of Procrustes, where the person in the bed was, you know, much longer, and they chopped his legs off so that he would fit in the bed. And I think we spend too much time in our society fitting the status quo, and that the actual permission that if I could grant everybody listening here is that thing about you, who knows what it is? Who knows what matters to you? Maybe, you know, what matters to you is some little part of your garden or something like that, but you would never really tell somebody that, you know, worshiping the dahlias is the thing that makes me the happiest as a human being, something like that, because, you know, where's that going to take me? But that is actually the thing that's cool about you, about you, the listener. And so I guess that's what I feel like saying is, let's give ourselves permission to celebrate our interesting idiosyncrasies.
And be inclusive about it. And I love it. That is, my mom will say to me sometimes, you know, that website of yours, it's got everything but the kitchen sink on it. I'm like, well, maybe we need that too then. I keep asking somebody to write me a blog about the kitchen sink. So if y'all want to write me a blog about the kitchen sink, I will post them so we have the kitchen sink finally. But I couldn't agree with you more there. People get so afraid of like, if anybody ever really actually knew that about me, that I collect coffee cups or cat pins or have too many shoes or I do this show with my hair on top of my head and no makeup on. Oh, well, you know, and that's awesome.
I think it's really celebrating that there's only one of you. There's only one of you. And I think that's one of the most important things. Because people look outside and they try to copy other people, but it's not like that. There's only one of you. And the only way you're going to come fully forward is when you really, really, really give birth to who you uniquely, very uniquely, one of you, only one of you.
Ah, I love it. All right, I'm going to be quiet. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Elizabeth. You're a great conversationalist. As I said, you got me to say all kinds of things I wouldn't normally say. You're good. Thank you.
I love having you on the show, and it's just an honor to have you here, and I hope you all enjoyed listening to the amazing Tammy Simon, the founder of Sounds True at soundstrue.com, and she mentioned there are a lot of books on Sounds True, a lot of podcasts, a lot of everything. I hope you all will head there right after the show or during the show and go check it out. But Tammy, thank you so much, and please continue to keep staying safe and well. All right. Enjoy.
All right,
thank you, Julie, for giving us Tammy today and Raspberry and Beulah. That's so cute. All right. Lots of love, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You show. Just a reminder that we are not advertising funded or anything. We are all grassroots. We've got a couple million downloads, and it is all because of you. It's all because of you listening to us and embracing our guests and what they say and have to offer us to help us all be our best. And so I really thank you so much for helping us be a number one rated live show. All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.